Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
How exciting is this?
With Waitrose.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Up and at 'em, come on, things to do. Don't cheer, you'll just embarrass yourselves. We're not bored of it yet, so it's lovely. There's no stopping them. No stopping them.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
Oh, there's nothing nicer, is there? Nothing nicer.
With Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
I mean, what's not to like?
Saturday and Sunday from 9:30.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Okay, if your life's pretty good today, then it's just about to get even better. Things don't have to be bad to be better. Get a load of this guy. Vassos, over to you.
Where have all the major awards gone? Don't bother looking. Our next guest has all of them. BAFTAs, Grammys, Golden Globes, Oscars, and now a new film sure to win many more. American Symphony is available now on Netflix, so let's all enjoy a festive feast of John Batiste.
John!
Yay! Yay!
Good morning!
Hello, world. Hello, Chris. How you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for being here. Oh, my goodness me. It's such a pleasure to have you, your bag of skin and bones, in front of us right now.
Right here in the flesh. Flesh.
Oh, my goodness me. John, congratulations on everything thus far. I'm sure there's so much more to come. There's so much more to talk about. Oh, my goodness. We've got to get everyone to watch this Netflix thing. It's called American Symphony. If you have Netflix and you don't watch this film of John's over the Christmas holidays, this weekend, maybe early in the new year, you may as well get rid of your Netflix subscription, because there's no point in you having it. What do you think, John?
Oh, man. Chris, I love you. Hello. Good morning.
Oh, John, you're an amazing person, but you are... out amazed on a daily basis by your amazing partner.
Oh, my goodness.
For people who don't know, why might that be the case?
She's a superstar, Suleika Jawad. She is the most incredible artist. She's the most incredible writer. She's a community organizer. She's an activist. She's so many things, but to me, she's just the best person in the world.
Okay, now, she has her challenges. As a couple, you have your challenges.
Yes.
Can you speak to that? Let's just frame that quickly.
Yes.
I won't dwell on it, none of that kind of stuff, just so people know where we are, where we're coming from.
Well, no spoilers, but the American Symphony film, you see that she struggles with a leukemia diagnosis.
Yeah.
She has a bone marrow transplant. And she's doing well now and doing great in the world and moving around. But, you know, it was dicey for a minute. We didn't know if she would make it. So now it's a blessing to be here every day and have a chance to continue to do the good work.
And she has a history with leukemia. So this is the second time it's tried to get her.
Second time, you know, she was 21 the first time.
Mm.
And about 10 years passed, and it came back in a way that was so unexpected in the middle of filming this documentary. So you'll see the American Symphony goes through all of that, goes through the diagnosis, goes through the ups and downs of life.
Yeah. Yeah, she is an amazing person. Together, you're just an amazing couple.
Yes, and
I've never seen a dynamic, a situation, a story, an environment with the ingredients that American Symphony has in it. Because the parallels, you see often in dramatizations or similarly, but this is in real life, you know, and the highs that you're hitting on the days that you're hitting them, and the lows that she's surviving and make just getting through the next minute, let alone the next day, whilst you're doing the most glorious, the most celebratory, performative accomplishment, when you're getting through all that stuff. On the day that your 11 Grammys were announced, it couldn't have been more bittersweet, because that was the same day.
Yes, it's the same day that we got the news of her diagnosis.
Yeah.
So it was always really hard to stay in the present with the Grammys. I was in the Grammys doing performance, winning the biggest prize in music, and the next day I'm in the hospital back in New York City. So the juxtaposition is very, very dramatic. It's one of the most difficult periods, if not
the most difficult period of our lives.
And obviously burdens and challenges such as this are heavy, can be heavy, sometimes they're heavy, but you can still wear them lightly. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, because you went on, you performed at the Grammys, you were nominated for 11, you won 5 on the night. Winning 5 out of 11, that's pretty high stakes as well. That doesn't happen very often. And also you won the prize of all prizes, the album of the year. But you, and there is genuine joy in your performance.
Yes.
There is no heaviness around that performance.
No.
We see her watching you at home. There is joy and lightness in her heart too. So it doesn't, even though it is heavy, it doesn't have to be heavy.
That's right. You don't have to have everything be heavy. You, to get to the joy, you got to go through the dark to get to the light. That's the thing. You got to have both in life. And that's the thing about the film that I love about art being a creative mechanism for survival. Creativity as a means to survival, something that we do to create meaning and purpose in the struggle. And that's something everybody has access to, not just the great musicians of the world, you know?
And it's funny because, you know, I've been happily married for 17 years. Vasa's been married for together forever.
Yeah, we're nearly 30 now.
30 years, right? He barely looks old enough, does he? You know, it's incredible.
Wow.
And it's
great.
You know, we are devoted to our wives and to our families. When I look at you and your wife, Salika, and he secretly marries her during this film, by the way.
You know, that was
nice work there, John.
That was the day before she went in the hospital for the transplant. We had planned to get married and had been engaged, but the timing felt like it was a protest against all the things that life was throwing at us. Beautiful, beautiful way to look at life sometimes, where you counteract the negative energy with good.
You've been together for so long because you met at Bandcamp, that's
yeah,
right,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, kids.
And
kids.
When I see you compared to my marriage and Vasa's marriage and other people, you are so as one. And that's no disrespect to my wife or your wife, Vas. But you are so as one.
Oh,
it's,
my goodness.
It's really interesting the way you are together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
it's all tacit. It's all ethereal. It's all spiritual.
Well, that's a beautiful thing about having creativity as something that you share. It allows for you to have space to process a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, when I was writing this symphony, I was processing all of that. It all went into the symphony. And she was in the hospital and couldn't write because of the medication that was blurring her vision. She's a writer. She's written best-selling books, New York Times bestsellers, and she couldn't write. So she started to paint. So I recommend that for any relationship out there. Just find a mutual creative language or something you can do.
Yeah. Just get it down, get it out there.
Yeah.
Because they say, that, don't they, often you don't know what you're thinking until you say it out loud. And it's the same thing with feelings. Sometimes you don't know what you're feeling until you actually turn that feeling into a physical something or other, whether it's a hug or a kiss or you're making love or you're sketching or you're cooking a meal together or you're chopping with each other or you're doing something together.
That's the quality time.
I heard this great thing from a neuroscientist yesterday about the fact that because of the way the acoustics work in our neurology, with our neurology inside our own head, it is helpful to our sanity that we can't really hear what we're saying. And that's why it's really interesting to hear your voice back, because your brain neutralizes your voice inside your own hearing for the benefit of your...
Wow.
Of you not sending yourself crazy.
Wow. That's interesting. That really can explain a lot.
But musically it's different, of course.
Well, musically you have to be able to have a self-awareness. When you're making music with people, you have to have empathy. You're listening to the group. Sometimes, you know, with a symphony, you're on stage with 200 musicians almost. It's like you have to be able to hear yourself in the context of others.
Yeah, you got to muster the troops.
Muster the troops.
You got to muster the troops, man. And there's so much to talk about here. Right, I'm going to fly through this. We're going to get through this.
Yeah.
We have to get through this. So you were brought up around music. You have piano lessons every Saturday from the age of like 10 to 18 years old. You weren't always piano, were you?
No, drums. I started on drums. First percussion and then drums and then piano. You know, it progressed to the piano.
Okay. But a piano, out of all the instruments other than drums, is the most percussive because you still hit the keys.
Oh, yeah.
And you're a very rhythmical pianist, aren't
you? Yeah, yeah. Rhythm, it's a percussion instrument. It's beautiful to think about the piano like 88 drums. It's 88 tuned drums. I like that. You know,
nice.
One day I I started to look at the piano like that. I have so many different ways of playing the piano that I've developed. But then I started to think about, whoa, I have 10 fingers. That's like 10 drumsticks.
Yeah.
And then piano is 88 tuned drums, and you can create.
Yeah.
Finger painting.
Yeah, of course. And you can sing.
Yeah, yeah.
You got that going on as well.
You got to do everything you can in the world and give the love that you get. I get so much love. I'm so humbled to be here with you. I'm humbled to be so able to live this creative life. And it's a beautiful thing that I'm able to share. So I have to give my whole self to it, you know. I have to give my whole self to it as a way that's the only thing that feels right.
Yeah, yeah. Talking to John Batiste here on Virgin Radio, live and direct from the US of A, John. It's so cool, man. American Symphony is out on Netflix now. All right, it will help you dip your toe into the infinite pool of wonder that is John Batiste and his mates and his family. And it's all, there's nothing not to like it. Well, not from what I've seen anyway. So he's nominated for 11 Grammys on one day. The same day as his beautiful wife is diagnosed for the second time with leukemia. Mm. And all this is going on whilst he's got a day job on a late night TV show. What the heck, John? can you speak to that again? You're in the UK, people may not know, yes. Blah, blah, blah.
There's a show, the late show in New York. It's all around the world. It's not just New York. It's not Louisiana. It's all across America. And people watch this show. David Letterman, if you've heard of him, he did it for almost 34 years. And then the gentleman, Stephen Colbert, who does it now, a friend of mine, we did the show together for 7 years. So you'll see the last year that I was on the show is the period that this doc films. So I'm on television in millions of homes every night in America. Every single night throughout this whole journey that you're seeing me write the symphony while going to do the show 5 nights a week. Then I'm also going to the hospital. I'm the main caregiver for my wife. And all this is happening leading up to Carnegie Hall, where we performed the symphony, leading up to the Grammys, where we're nominated for 11 Grammys. All these things are happening in live performances. I'm on the road. I'm doing it. It was really, really, it's hard to describe the whiplash of this 7-8 month period.
But at no point in the film do you look like you're running on fumes.
Well, you just have to have the full momentum and upward trajectory that's pulling you. I have faith in God, and that's my main thing, man. Believe. Everybody out there that's listening, you have it within you to do what you need to do. You're meant for greatness.
You can either be with your higher power or without your higher power. So you can either have a rocket on your back, or you can not have a rocket on your back. I prefer a rocket on my back.
Hello, Chris. Good morning.
Do you know what I'm saying? But all this is going on whilst you have this day job, performing with the likes of who? Who have you backed on that show?
Oh, I mean, the show is just, you know, anybody in the world that you can imagine comes to the show. You have the biggest musicians in the world. You have the biggest politicians, A-list Hollywood celebrities. This is a great, great thing to do.
Who have you played with?
I mean, man, I don't even recall everybody. We played Willie Nelson, played with on the show.
Mr. Wonder?
Yeah, Stevie Wonder. Stevie's become a friend, but we played on the show together.
That's, I mean, come on.
I started doing that show when I was a kid, man. I'm the youngest person to ever do that band leader, musical director role in history. So, yeah. You know, this was like my second master's degree. Felt like I was going to college again. It was a crash course in so much.
And you did, you know, you basically were nominated for 11 Grammys for your, not your hobby, but for what, because you were being, your job was the show, the band leading on the show.
Yes, yes,
and
sir.
And this side, I mean, some side hustle, 11 Grammy nominations, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I before I was on the show, I was doing this incredible path of band leading and being an artist and performing my own music. And then I had this just out of left field, this opportunity to, you know, as a kid, make a whole bunch of money and be on television every night with some great people. And I took that road, this alternate path for 7 years. And I felt like the We Are album was me getting back true to form to what I had been doing for a decade before the show. So it was just like a beautiful I don't even want to call it a detour. It was just something that I didn't expect on the journey. And it's led me to where I am today. So I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for
all of it. I'm grateful for it because I get to meet you.
I know. I would not be here with you, Chris.
Honestly,
I'm sitting here with you.
I'm so excited.
This is like it's truly, truly a gift to be here with you, man. Well, I love your energy.
Right back at you. Love yours too. Love yours too. I watched American Symphony last week and I talked to John, our John, who books the guests. And I talked to about you and they said, oh, God, they heard what you said on the show and he's coming over and he might be available. And so I got to watch it. For my job, I had to watch American Symphony again last night. That's what I got paid for. I got to feel great again about human beings because that's my job. Thank you.
I love that you see it as a job. I'm just so grateful that you will watch the film. We put so much into the film and the response of people feeling so connected to it. It really is mind-boggling.
It is. It's the best, man. So being nominated for 11 Grammys is one thing.
Yes.
You got to win one of the mothers, right? How about winning five of them, Jean-Baptiste?
You know, I'm grateful that the music moves people. We got some music we put out, and we're going back to the Grammys this year. And the best part is that this year, 6 nominations, I can go with Suleika this time. Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much of the film, but when I was at the Grammys, obviously she couldn't be there with me. And this year, the song that's nominated for Song of the Year is a song I wrote. It's entitled Butterfly. I wrote this song for Suleika when she was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And now we can go to the Grammys. We get a do-over.
Yeah.
We get to go to the Grammys together.
Gosh.
And celebrate the song that I wrote about this period when she couldn't be with us together.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm really living a very blessed life.
You
I must
really
say.
Are.
Very, very.
I mean, you
very
totally
blessed.
Appreciate it, and you honor it. But you are. It is unbelievably blessed your life. But God has chosen the right person for the job. It has to be said.
Well, you know what? I'm not afraid to put in the work, and I know that comes with a lot of responsibility, and I'm up to the task. I just want to give the people the best quality stuff. We're in a time where people really want quality music and they want to see real people.
Yeah.
You know, we have all this technological advancement and AI, but people want to hear you on the radio, Chris. People want to hear a real person out there.
Yeah.
And we're out here. Real, you know, we're here.
Yeah.
We're going to hold the line.
Yeah. And sometimes they don't know they know, but they always know. You always know people. That's
yeah,
the
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So you're on the way to the Grammys and you are nominated. You got 11 nominations. How does that feel in the car going to the Grammys? How is that when you're nominated for 11?
Well, you know, I had this feeling that Suleika was on the mend from the transplant, which had happened about a month prior. So we had known that she was doing better. So I felt like I could go and do this thing that I needed to do. So I was there and I was in the car, I was singing, freedom, freedom, ooh. I was in the car just practicing my performance that I was doing that night. It was so much that I had to do. Like, when you're nominated for 11 Grammys, they don't tell you that you're going to be working the whole night.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be basically sitting front row center, and you're on camera all night. You got a performance coming up, so you got to be prepping for the performance, which is, you know, my performance, I had 20 dancers, 10, 20 musicians, set design, wardrobe change, like all of these things are happening. And then you have to just look like you're just the calm as a cucumber when they say, and for the next award, and they put the camera 2 inches from your face. You know, it's just it was quite a night. By the end of it, you're just so tired and you're high on adrenaline and you're starving. You know, it's just like so many emotions. But yeah, that was just one of those incredible juxtapositions of life. Go to the airport the next day, and I go right back to my wife. So that was my life in this time.
Yeah, and it's all in the film, and it's that juxtaposition of the two things. You know, the life is crazy. We know life is crazy. To be born, you know, we talk about it a lot. There's a 400,000 trillion to one chance of us being born. So what is the meaning of life? The meaning of life is to get up every day and just celebrate the fact we've won that.
Go ahead and preach. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that's where we are, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing. All we have to do really is just remember that.
And yes.
The day will be pretty good from there on in. On most, I would imagine most times.
Yeah, see, Chris, you're my man. Look, I see you.
What is it like to have, what am I going to say next, right? What is it like to have, we could play Guess the Question. You'll never guess the question.
No,
right?
I'm so curious.
Okay, what is it like to have Michelle and Barack Obama as bosses?
Ooh,
what are they like as, why are they your bosses?
Well, they're executive producers of the film. This is something that we didn't have when we were making the film. It was just Matthew Heineman, the director, myself, my wife. That was the team, and a few incredible producers, Lauren Domino from New Orleans, who jumped on board. Just a small group. It's like a small band, right? Making this thing. We don't even know what it's going to be. It's 1,500 hours of footage. And all these things that, in worst case scenario, if we don't want to make a movie with this footage, it'll be the most incredible home videos you can imagine. This chronicles of this highs and the lows of life that are happening. So we get to the end of it, and we end up partnering with Netflix and the Obamas, and the film is all across the world. And it's, you know, it's not what we didn't have that at the beginning to think about. It's so authentic in that way when you're watching the film. It's not like there was any boss or anybody saying, you got to do this or that, or get this shot. We weren't overthinking anything like that. So I'm glad that it was after the fact. And they've become great friends, and it's a beautiful thing. These are people who, they have compassion and empathy, and they understand, you know, telling stories about art and creativity in a politically divided time. That's more important than politics.
Yeah, yeah. Empathy is making sure that the other people know they're being heard, and compassion is acting upon that listening.
Yes, we need to learn to see each other more, see each other again. It's a beautiful thing that art, the music, you know, that's the universal language, and that's what I believe is the most unifying force on this planet.
Yeah, well done for Soul, by the way, as well.
Oh, man.
You and your co-writers.
Yes, yes, yes. Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, myself, we won an Academy Award for Soul, and I must say that it's coming back to the theaters.
That's an Academy Award. Where'd you keep yours?
Oh, my goodness.
Did you get one each?
It's at home. It's right there next to the rest of the things.
So like the rest of the things.
You know, it's there. It's sitting there.
Excuse me. What are you referring to? The rest of the things.
You know, it's I have to work on the Tony. I have the Emmy and the Grammy and the Oscar. And that's so beautiful because I'm just a kid from New Orleans.
And you're still a kid.
I'm just still, I still feel like the same kid from New Orleans. I don't feel like anything is different. I'm just doing what I love and focusing on the craft.
Yeah. Wow.
You know,
I love music, John.
Yeah.
As you, I think you might be able
of
to
course,
tell.
Of course. I heard your tunes.
I love music. I really love music, and I love symphonic music, and I love sound scores. I love John Williams and Hans Zimmer and all these kind of people. And obviously, I love you. However, caveat to all that, I've never really got what conductors do. Really. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know they're really, really important. But I get it most from watching American Symphony when you're at it. Now, you don't actually conduct... this whole thing culminates in Carnegie Hall. Watch it. I'm not going to say anymore. Just watch the damn thing, right? But in the rehearsal room and the writing room, you are jumping about. You got the Lakers jacket on. You got something going on. And I'm like, oh, now I'm getting it better than ever before.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a living, breathing thing, isn't it?
Oh my goodness, this is it's an organism. In the orchestra that we created, I had to pick every musician hand select. It's not your traditional orchestra. I was really thinking about how do you blend all of these different sounds and styles of music together that have never been blended together before and create a new symphony. So I'm thinking about, okay, this section over here, these guys are improvisers. These are classical musicians. They don't improvise. They only read. These are people who read certain types of notation. These are people who play some archaic folk instruments. This is the electronics modular synthesizer corner of sampling devices and all these programmers. And I'm bringing all these things together. So you got to, and the rehearsal especially, you got to pull everything out of every person, every section, so that everybody can see the vision. And then once they see, oh, this is what, I didn't know what, I heard what you were saying, but I didn't hear it in my head because it's something that we had all never done before.
Yeah.
So how do you get everybody on the same page. It was an athletic endeavor to get everybody on
it
the
really
same.
It really was. And you can hear, it's like instructing a heart to beat or a liver to cleanse.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, liver, you cleansed enough. Cleanse less, less, less. Heart, be more, be more.
Yeah.
You know, blink. Eyes, you need to blink. Brow, you need to furrow. Sort it all out, my friend. And like you say, the different sort of cultures and backgrounds and lineage and upbringing and education of the different musicians coming together was like a representation of the world.
Yes.
And then you stick them on stage and you've got this 1 hour symphony at Carnegie Hall and you are good to go. And you look so nerveless when you enter.
Yes.
You didn't seem to be nervous at all. I don't know.
Yes.
How was that when you entered?
Well, you know, the things about these performances in perspective to what was going on in my life.
Yeah.
It's like you get to the stage at Carnegie Hall, and after we'd come through all that we'd gone through over the last several months leading up to this performance, it just felt like nothing could shake my faith in what we were doing.
Right.
It was so important that this piece came into the world. And that's the one and only performance of this piece that's ever happened. So I'm going to do this piece at some point in the future, but I'm grateful. We had 13 cameras capturing this performance. And it
trying to capture.
I mean, this is, you know, it's hard to put into words. It's a beautiful moment.
Yeah. And do we talk about what happened in the middle, or should we leave that?
Oh, well,
Should we leave that?
It's a director's dream and a producer's nightmare and a performer's worst nightmare.
Or opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Or best opportunity.
Well, I saw it as everything's opportunity. Everything's meant to happen. Everything's meant to be. Yeah. Something happened in the performance that we're referring to. You know, when you watch the film, you'll see. And a lot of people don't know who watched the film that were at the concert that even happened. They were sitting in the audience. This is how disastrous the moment could have been, that the people in the audience would not have known why the performance could have fallen apart at that moment. It would have just looked like I cracked.
I thought it was part of it at one point. I thought, is this part of it? And then I thought, if it is, the people in the orchestra are not only brilliant musicians, they're also amazing actors. Because if this is meant to be, then this is scripted and that's an act. But it couldn't have been.
No.
Let's leave that right out there.
Yes, indeed. Man, oh man.
John, how is everything now? How is your life now? How is it at home? You've also already alluded to the fact that things are much better.
Yes,
there's more well-being around. Again, without providing a spoiler for the film, something happens at the end of the film to do with where you are as a family. How are you? How is it? Where are we?
Whoa, everything's incredible. I'm so happy. So happy. It's moving to even think about this. It's just so, you know, Sulaika's doing well. My wife's doing well. I'm doing well. I'm here with you. I'm performing around the world, coming up in the first time I'm ever going out on tour. February, I think we put the tickets up and I think it's almost all sold out.
You've never toured before?
Never toured.
Isn't that
I've
incredible?
Never toured. Believe it or not, there's so many people around the world who connect with my music and have sent me love, and I haven't even gotten a chance to see them and be together in person.
So what kind of show is that going to be? Is it a bit of orchestral, a bit of pop, a bit of what?
You know, this is the thing about my shows. When you come to see the shows, those who have seen, it ranges from everything that you can imagine, and sometimes we even go into the audience and we perform and we take the audience from the venue and do this thing I call a love ride, where we perform and take people out and do a street processional. There's so many things that can happen, but one thing I will say, it's healing, it's purifying. When you go there, it's more than entertainment.
Yeah.
It's like you're taking part in a real transformative experience, and I'm grateful to be at the center of that. Yeah, that's what music should be. It's not just entertainment.
Yeah. What about the Madonna thing?
Oh, Madonna.
By the way, this is all in the film. What's going on? Well, how much you want to say about that?
Oh, I mean, you know, you make friends in the world. People, you meet the most interesting people.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy that this film was made, because a lot of stuff that you see in it, you wouldn't even believe if I would have told you.
No.
And this is my life.
Not
this
in
is,
one lifetime. A half a lifetime.
This 7 months is representative of the pace that my life has been at since joining the show, since before joining the television show. So it's just really just... now I feel like I'm moving into a new phase, to answer your question, of really, okay, I can go on the road. I'm making space for a lot more things.
Yeah.
And this felt like the culmination of a decade of just this incredible, epic journey. It's like the Odyssey or something.
Well, it's amazing. John, I know you got to go. You got to go. Hats off to that piano teacher that you catch up with again, who tells you to breathe.
Man.
How good is he?
Man, William Doglin.
He's the best.
Yeah, yes, that's my guy.
Is he your Saturday morning guy?
This is a guy I started studying with. I took a lesson every single day.
I know, every Saturday morning.
Yeah, you know this, man. Yeah. I'm so glad.
Yeah, you're the best. You got to go. You're way over time. Great to see you, man.
I'm so glad to be here with you. Chris. Chris Evans in The Breakfast Show. Ha-ha.
American Symphony, available now on Netflix. That was John Batiste. He's got to go. When he leaves, it'll be like, it'll be unbelievable that he was ever here. But he was, because we have video evidence to prove it. Cheers, John. Happy Christmas.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. I want your love. On DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk.
I got my mind set on you.
Even if we're just dancing in the dark.
Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
All right, great guest number two. Here we go, Vassos.
You know and love him as the funny bloke on the stage. Your kids know and love him as the bloke flogging fruit and veg on CBeebies, and he's about to embark on a mammoth new tour. Yonks begins in Banbury in January and ends in London next Christmas, which goes to show there's always cause for Chris McCausland.
Morning, Chris.
Oh, Vassos, thank you so much for so brilliantly papering over the fact that I've got to follow John Batiste. What a conversation, Chris.
All right, the elephant's in the room. Let's just talk him out of the room. Were you aware of John before his appearance
on
the show?
Absolutely. I love a movie score. And you know what? You were talking about Hans Zimmer and the big guys before as well. And the stuff we done on Soul was fantastic, wasn't it? From 11 Grammy nominations to a fella that 2 weeks ago came second on Richard Osman's House of Games. Yeah, has there ever been a bigger drop-off?
Hang on a minute. You've won your awards. You've won your plaudits. You've sold out a 140-date tour in the past. This one's minuscule compared to your other tours.
This one hopefully will get bigger as it goes on. You know, you put so many on sale, and the last tour we did was 140-odd, and I think we've got about 90 on sale at the minute. And if people are buying tickets, we'll keep on adding them, you know?
Yeah, 100%, Chris, 100%. So, where do we start? Should we do a bit of an origin story?
Yeah.
Okay, because we've never done this before. So, where are we born? Give us your childhood in 60 seconds.
Well, born in Liverpool, West Derby Village in Liverpool. Born and raised on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Moved down to Kingston University in the mid-90s. And I still live within half a mile of the university, such as my lack of ambition to move on in the world. And got a daughter who is 10 years old called Sophie. And really, I've been doing stand-up for 20 years now. And I have a degree in software engineering from when the internet was 5 years old, which is useless now. That's the lot, Chris.
Wow. Let's talk about your site, the deterioration of your site. When did that begin, and why is that for people who aren't aware?
So I mean, I've been blind really since. It's difficult to say, you know, because like I was born with it. It's genetic, but my eyesight deteriorated very, very slowly over, you know, I'd say kind of the 20 years. But when it deteriorates, you kind of stop being able to do different things at different times. So there's not like there's no inciting incident. There's no kind of one day you wake up and you can't see anything. You just kind of, it's like the frog in the water, you know. You don't notice it happening while it's happening until, you know, maybe one day you nearly get it by a bus and you think, maybe I shouldn't be crossing the road on my own anymore. So when people say, when did you go blind? It's, you know, over kind of late teens, early 20s, over that period is when you stop being able to do the important stuff, you know, your mobility kind of is taken away, your ability to be able to see anything on a computer screen or a telly and things like that. But, you know, I would say pretty much blind for the last 25 years, really.
And when does the humour creep in as a crutch, a tool, and then a celebration of the things that one can do as opposed to one can't do?
Yeah, I mean, humour's always there, isn't it? I think when you are, it helps you deal with things. It might be seen as a way of maybe not dealing with things in a way. You know, the kind of the Chandler Bing approach to life, in that you make the joke to not have to deal with it. But I suppose in a way that is a way of dealing with it as well, isn't it? In that if you can laugh at yourself and not take yourself too seriously and not dwell on the frustrations and the difficulties, then maybe you can find them easier to deal with. And I suppose in terms of, you know, comedy, when I started doing comedy, I didn't mention it, and I didn't talk about being blind on stage when I started 20 years ago. And I think the reason for that is, you know, when I was, because I was a massive stand-up fan, loved stand-up all through the 90s.
Who were your favourites?
Oh, like, I mean, it started off with obviously Jack D and Lee Evans and Alan Davis, but then I came across Eddie Izzard, which just absolutely blew me mind. You know, this new style of comedy that was, it just seemed so different to what everybody else was doing, and it was, I got into comedy because I loved that. And I didn't really talk about being blind. And I think part of the thing was that I kind of thought that if I was in an audience and I came out on stage, I think, oh, this is going to be 20 minutes of blind jokes. So I went the other way, and I didn't really do it. But as you get older and you look back, and I think maybe there was also an element of not being necessarily comfortable in your own skin, and it being a way of kind of, allowing myself to ignore it or to kind of detach myself from it. And as you get older and you get a little bit more comfortable in your skin, you become a dad, your priorities shift, you have more original stories, more original life experiences to talk about rather than just the cliched kind of didn't see it subjects, you know. And I do talk about it more on stage now. It's still a smaller part of a show, but it's, you know, I think it just shows that you get to a certain age and you are a lot more comfortable in your own skin, you know.
And it gets more and more comfortable, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it does. And, you know, when you're in your mid-20s as well, and you are caught in that real conflict of wanting to be cool. And when you are drip-fed this deteriorating condition, you fight against it, you know, and you end up in this kind of prolonged period of denial, without ever really hitting that, having that moment where you have to accept it, if you know what I mean. It takes a while. I always say, you know, somebody born blind is a completely different beast to somebody who loses their sight gradually, because it takes a hell of a long time to get to anywhere near that level of comfort and acceptance with it. You know, you shun the things that identify you as being blind, the white stick and all this kind of stuff, you know, and you'd much rather kind of, you think, it's the irony is that, you know, if you just did, you know, in my 20s, if I just kind of accepted it and got on with it and had a white stick and kind of went out there and bashed my way around, you'd look more normal than being the kind of almost blind person trying to pretend he's not, and to everybody else looking like, oh, look at that drunk over there who can't even walk.
Wow. What a story. What a tale. And your previous tour, Speaky Blinder, sort of nods a wink to that, doesn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, yeah. It was, and because that last tour was... I suppose exactly what I've just been talking about, in that it was a culmination of kind of, you know, getting to that kind of being comfortable, you know, in my own skin and talking about a lot of things that everybody can relate to, you know. So I was talking a lot about family life and being a dad and being, you know, being a husband. But, you know, comedians and myself included, you know, you will talk about your family and your kids, and you will, you know, you'll take the mickey, and you'll kind of, the comedy will be on them for an aspect of it, but then I'd spin it back around and talk about my own shortcomings and doing all of that in the dark. And so there was quite a lot of personal stuff in it, and the good thing with that is it's subject matter that everybody can relate to, but then there's just a little slight angle on it that gives it a fresh kind of perspective, really. Whereas this next tour, I've given them all the tour off. You know, I've given me daughter the tour off. It's about random stuff. This one. I've gone old school. I've gone back to the comedy I liked growing up in the 90s. You know, everything from AI to donuts and turnips.
Right, so tell us about that from somebody who can't see, because obviously there's a phrase, it's called observational humour.
Yeah.
You don't just observe with your eyes, you observe with your ears and your pheromones and your being and your presence and all that kind of different stuff. But is it a lot about what you hear? How does that get into your brain? And how does it come out of your mouth on stage?
Yeah, so it is still observational comedy. And for somebody who can't see, you know, I still do paint... I like to paint pictures in people's minds. You know, you like to paint the visuals, because a lot of the time with I think with good comedy, it's the images in your own mind that you can paint for people, that you can allow them to paint in their mind, that make them laugh more than the actual than a specific punchline, if you know what I mean. And I still like to do that, but you know what the difference is, I suppose, is that I'm not going to be stood on stage, you know, talking about the you know, like Billy Connolly would very, you know, he will describe, you know, what somebody looked like and what they were wearing. And obviously, and sometimes comedians will make that up just for the joke. And I don't have the luxury of being able to do that. So it's very much about, you know, me. I paint the pictures of me in these situations, or about, you know, the situations that I was in, or, you know, obviously when you're talking about things that you've subject matter that's a little bit more, you know, detached from experience, like, you know, I've got stuff in this new tour about Shakespeare and things like that. It's you're going for the stuff that people can relate to, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it completely. So this tour is called Yonks. The last one was called Speaky Blinder. We're just talking to John Batiste there, your nemesis, your interview nemesis.
Oh, what a cool dude, wasn't he?
Sorry about that. What a hospital pass for both of us, by the way. And on his way to the Grammys, so he's going to the Grammys, he's got 11 Grammy nominations. He won 5 in the end, but he's nervous on the way for lots of different reasons, not least of all because he's got to perform, you know, at the end of it all. He's got to hold it together, he's got to give speeches or not give speeches, doesn't know when he's going to win. He might run out of speeches if you nominate for 11. But your tour starts in second week of Jan, you know, for John's trip to the Grammys. I'm thinking about your Christmas, you know, because this is a big old thing ready to go. How is that for you the week before, the 2 weeks before? Will you be able to relax? Are you okay with it? Do you park it? How do you deal with that?
With the tour?
The prospect of it,
yeah. Yeah. I can't wait, to be honest. It's
Nerves?
No, because I've been, so the last, you know, 2.5 months, I've been on the tour before the tour. So we've you know, I prepare, the 3 P's, Chris, right. The 3 P's. And so I've been doing the small rooms, you know, and getting the tour ready. So even before doing the tour before the tour, which is the warm-up tour to make sure the tour's ready for the tour, I don't even go into the warm-up tour without the show. I do clubs to get all the bits ready. I want to make sure people are laughing at them in clubs, and then I make sure I've got enough to go into that warm-up tour. So there's different stages along the way, but it's all done. It's ready to go, Chris.
It's fascinating. I bet you can't wait, can you?
Can't wait.
When you're doing the tour before the tour before the tour before the tour, which was the first sort of 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes that of this particular set that you've now crafted and will still develop over the next year, which was the first bit that said, it's going to be all right, Chris, it's going to be all right? which was the bit that landed best first.
So what would it be? So I've got quite a, I'm at that age now, you know, I'm 46 and you kind of, things start going wrong, don't they? And I've got quite an extended piece at the minute about the various medical, you know, it's probably, you know, slightly unbroadcastable at this time of the morning, but there's quite a long piece on that that just goes really, really, really well. And
what can you say? I mean, we all know that the problems start to move down the body and then 30 to 45, the sort of towards the front below the waist, and then they start to make their way around the back. Is this the kind of thing?
Yeah, it's do you know what? I had a few problems, Chris, and it's one of them things where you kind of, as blokes, we put these things off, don't we? You know? I think women sort their stuff out straight away. We put them off, and while we put them off, we kind of self-diagnose and we think, oh no, is this the start of the end? And I went to the doctors and it turns out I had something that I'd never even heard. I did have a thing and I was correct to go along, and I will try and word this guy.
Please.
I had on my unmentionables, I had varicose veins on the left one of them.
Wow.
And I'd never even known that was a thing. They might as well have told me I had toothache in me behind, right? Because I didn't even know that was a thing you could have as a man.
And was it a varicose veins?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that. I'm older than you and I didn't know. Thank you for enlightening me.
There you go. The doctor actually said to me, he goes, this is the medical advice I got. He goes, there's an operation you can have. He goes, just book it in when you need it. And so I said, how will I know when I need it? And he goes, don't worry, you'll know.
Oh. And have you had it?
No. I'm still waiting for that moment when I definitely know. Yeah.
How do you feel right now with that, to regard to that?
All good. It's I mean, who'd have thought the varicose veins on your unmentionables would have been the best outcome of any two options? You know,
yeah, of course. I mean, that's the thing. It's a release, a blessed relief, isn't it?
Yeah. So.
I've had all my varicose veins done in my legs. Didn't check anywhere else, to be honest. I've had them microwaved and stripped out and all that stuff.
Oh my goodness, mate. Yeah, it's but no, the tour at the minute. I'd like to think it's about everything and it's about nothing. You know, I'm a big.
It's like life.
I love technology, moving into the future, AI. It's you know, will it destroy us all? But at the minute, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
And, yeah.
And all, everything in between, really.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So you have won a comedy competition. One or two or more than two?
Oh, do you know, I mean, like comedy, like 20 years I've been doing this. And when you start off, you do new act competitions and things like that. So they were, you know, they're a staple of getting into comedy, you know, and it's kind of what gets you your name on the circuit and gets you off the open mic circuit, you know, when you start off. And then you once you're on the circuit, you build your name and your career kind of just by with consistency and you know, and being prolific with your material. The Edinburgh Fringe comes into it a lot. I would say that, you know, now I've been doing this 20 years, I think my pride of place at home is my celebrity mastermind trophy.
Yeah, did you come second?
Not a celebrity mastermind. I won with my chosen specialised subject of Pearl Jam, 90s grunge rockers Pearl Jam, which just shows how academic I'm not.
Oh no, so you came second in House of Games.
House of Games.
You won mastermind.
Oh, there you go. But with Pearl Jam, does that count?
Yeah, of course. 100%.
And Diamond was doing The Birth of British Radar. That's a proper subject, isn't it?
Wow, yeah. The Channel 4 documentary Travelogue series called Wonders of the World I Can't See, with four of your pals. Did you know all these guys? Tom Allen, Harry, our very own Tom Allen, Harry Hill, Gus Kahn, Lisa Tarbuck.
So Tom and Gus, yes, you know, and me and Tom, we've been doing comedy together for, you know, we kind of started off similar times. Harry, not so much, no. And Lisa, I'd never met her. She was a bit of a pipe dream, to be honest, if we could get her on it. And amazingly, we did, and we spent 5 days in Niagara Falls.
Wow.
And you know, I don't want to tell the people in charge of the budgets if we do a second series, but we could have done Scarborough, and it would have been fun. You know, no offense to Scarborough, but Lisa Talbot was such a wonderful energy that it was. it was phenomenal, to be honest. And the idea was really behind the series is it what is the point of me going to these places to go and look at the thing that everybody goes to look at, yeah. really? Is there much point when somebody can describe it from a picture? And you know, is there more going on in these places than just going to look at the thing? And the thing is that, you know, I think we were quite honest in the series and that some of the stuff was underwhelming. I think the Treasury in Jordan for me was quite underwhelming. Just having this kind of abstract thing that nobody really knew exactly what it was, having it described to me. But then the surrounding area was just phenomenal when you turn your back to it and you experience the surrounding area. Whereas Niagara Falls itself with Lisa was just completely overwhelming on all sensory fronts, you know. But then you turn your back to it and it's like Blackpool in the 80s.
Yeah, funny, man. I haven't seen that. This chat makes me want to watch that series, so I'm definitely going to do that. Wonders of the World I Can't See. Will you do more of those? It sounds like you might.
I'd love to. Yeah, I mean it's on the cards, and we've spoke about it. And Channel 4 were delighted with how it performed, and the feedback from the viewers was fantastic. But it's one of those things, isn't it? At the minute, where you know, I think TikTok and Instagram have stolen all the advertising money, and there's a queue of things waiting to be recommissioned. So you know, I think people want to make the people involved want to make more. And it's just a case of sitting there and waiting at the minute for somebody to sign us off and stick me on a plane.
Stick you on a plane because you're happy to go. You're definitely happy to go.
Happy to 100%. Go. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a good flyer, Chris.
Now this is interesting. Why not?
Do you know? I can't relax on them. I'm exhausted. When I get to the other end, I am exhausted from being on edge for however long the flight is. And do you know what I think it is as well?
Yeah,
when we hit turbulence, or any level of turbulence, I can't see how normal my surroundings are.
Right.
And I can't see the cabin crew going about their business with smiles on their faces. And
either way though, couldn't it?
Oh, in my mind, everyone's doing that Macaulay Culkin hand slap to the face, silent scream kind of thing. When every time we hit turbulence and any little bump, I'm like, what was that? Are we okay? Was that? And I'm a nightmare to sit next to, Chris.
What about travel sickness, motion sickness? Because you can't see.
Don't get it. No. No, I don't get the motions, the travel sickness at all. Just this
anxiety.
Level of exhaustion down to anxiety. Do you know, once I was going on a plane once, and I had some tablets prescribed to me by the doctor, and I can't remember what they were, like diazepam or something like along one of those apan tablets, and I took them when we were in the queue waiting to get on the bus to go to the plane. And then they announced that there was a problem with the plane.
Oh dear!
And it was going to be at least a 2 or 3 hour delay because they were going to need a new plane. On my head was nodding. I couldn't keep awake.
Yeah, I did that once before a radio show, completely by accident. I took sleeping pills 1 hour before a radio show.
Why?
I can't remember because I don't sleep very well, Vass. Good question, by the way. I can't remember why I took them. I think I was taking. I just took them at the wrong time, or I was taking them. Maybe been out all night. I can't remember. But I took them an hour before I was due on the radio.
Oh, my goodness. And
people had to wake me up at the end of every record. I'm not joking. To do the next link. I'm not making it up. And then I would fall straight back to sleep for the next 2 minutes.
It's quite a good practical joke, isn't it? Give someone sleeping pills.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Show.
Oh, jeez. Chris, your comedy travels were Middle East and most extraordinary overseas place you've played and smashed it?
Most extraordinary. I loved, you know, because you go to Singapore and Malaysia. So
right.
If you go to Singapore and I've done Mumbai and places like that, and you do a lot of these places, you do get, you know, you end up going halfway around the world to play to British people, you know.
Las Vegas is a big thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of these, like Singapore is expats, you know. But if you go to Mumbai to play there, it is you are playing to just the locals who love comedy and their English is incredible, you know, and so you get to do your comedy over there to you know, a completely different culture, and to have that and it go well is a great feeling, much better than, you know, going off around the world to make the Aussies and the Kiwis laugh, because it feels a little bit too similar to what you're doing at home. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
That is
fantastic, really. And Mumbai, what an experience that is. You can't do anything, can you, without a 10-minute kind of negotiation going on between you. You know, you'll end up in a banter, you know, bartering about something, and then you'll realise that you've just spent 10 minutes over about 15 pence. So.
Yeah, but you can't help it, can you? Because once you're in, you're in.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, Chris, great to meet you, man. ChrisMcCausland.com for tickets for this tour. It kicks off on the 9th of Jan. It finishes in 363 days' time thus far, but it could get bigger. These tours often do. 103 dates so far.
At the Hammersmith Apollo, Chris.
Wow.
Which is... you know, it's one of them things where when you get used to the venue. You, like the last tour, it was pretty much sold out right across the board, and I finished at the Shepherd's Bush Empire, which was incredible. And you have this anxiety: will I sell enough tickets? Will enough people turn up? And I sold it out, and you go, brilliant! I've made it! I can do it! And then they go, well, let's make the venues bigger. And you go, oh, I'm back to square one.
Yeah, of course. It's only ever relief, isn't it? It's all right for those guys.
Yeah, it's like when you go to the gym, you get used to lifting the weights. You think, I can do it, and they go, well, let's make it heavier.
Exactly. If it ain't bending, if the bar ain't bending...
I can't remember.
I can't remember it. It's pretending.
It's pretending.
There you go.
The bar ain't bending, it's pretending. Chris, great to have you here, man. You did not disappoint. You had to follow John Batiste, by the way.
Oh, and you know what? There's various... When doing this, you get to do so many different things, and there's so many different landmarks you hit along the way, and this, for me, is one of them. We have you on every morning at home, Chris.
Oh, do you actually?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So what a pleasure it is to be here. So thanks
Mate,
for having us.
That
Thank
is
you.
A real honour coming from you. I'll take that one, you, Vassos.
Thank you.
ChrisMcCausland.com. His talk itself on the 9th of Jan. He can't wait to do it. It's good to go. It's oven ready. Who said that? Oh, no, let's leave him out of it, shall we? Great to meet you, Chris.
Cheers, mate.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
let it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.